You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today on the show, Susan McPherson, who is an angel investor, a corporate responsibility expert, a cause marketer, and founder of McPherson Strategies. So she's done it all, and we are just so honored to have her on our program today. So first of all, Susan, welcome to the show, and how are you doing?
Oh, I am thrilled to be here, Michelle. Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me to participate.
Of course. I am so excited for the conversation that we'll be having. I think that it's a very relevant one and a very important one, talking about corporate responsibility and social impact. So we are definitely looking forward to that. Now, just to learn a little bit more about you to start off, I'd like to know, before we get talking to your business, McPherson Strategies, if you could tell us what you did before you started your career in consulting.
My dear, I have had 9 lives, probably going on 10. For the largest majority of my career, I worked for a global company, PR Newswire, and I was very much of an intrapreneur, meaning I was the go-to person to run all sorts of special projects, whether it was helping open our offices in Beijing and Shanghai, creating new products, doing marketing, doing sales. And then my last position with them was helping create services for corporate responsibility executives. And it was after that that I went into consulting for a social advocacy firm named Fenton. And I was there for almost 4 years. And it was at that point that I left to start my own consultancy, which is now growing quite successfully.
I would say so. It sounds like a fantastic business, and we are going to get to that later in the conversation. But I'd also like to know, when did you become passionate about corporate responsibility and social impact?
You know, I have to say my entire life, I was raised by a mom who worked for public television because she believed that was best programming available, in terms of the TV market. And I had a father who was a professor who both of them kind of drilled in my head as a young child about giving back, about doing the right thing and volunteering and getting involved in philanthropic organizations. And even though I didn't have a lot of money or come from wealth, it was more, what else can you do besides writing a check? And throughout my career, I was always involved in nonprofits, whether it was through fundraising, serving on boards, or advising. And when I was able to kind of combine it into my professional career, I really feel like I found the ideal situation.
Excellent. Now, talking more about how you got your start in consulting, what was that journey like, and what was your first impression of the field?
Moving into consulting was a very natural progression for me, and I felt very, very comfortable. I think it was more challenging when I chose to start my own business. I had always watched loads of other people do it and thought, I could never do that. And I finished up my last day of consulting at Fenton and literally started the position of my own business the next day. So I didn't even take a break. But it was more the fear of how do I do billing? How do I do those types of activities as opposed to taking care of clients, making sure they were getting what they needed, making sure the engagements went well. Those types of things felt completely comfortable for me.
Right. And, that's so great. Job in consulting, is one of the most fulfilling jobs in the area of business because you were able to have such a large impact on, people who own businesses and getting involved in all the different elements of that. So that's very special. Now, I'd like to remind our listeners that if you are just now tuning into our show, you are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We're talking with our guest today, Susan McPherson, the founder of McPherson Strategies, talking more about her background in consulting and now about Corporate responsibility and social impact. Now, Susan, I know that you do a lot of work within these two topics. And, you know, first of all, I'd like to know from you, if a company does not have an aspect of corporate responsibility, you know, is that company behind the times compared to the trends that we see today?
I have to say yes. I don't know if I would label it behind the times as much as missing an opportunity to bolster their chance for hiring the best employees, for maintaining the best employees, for helping them sell their products, all of the above. So to me, it's a lost opportunity if they're not. But it's the rare organization, both large and small, that are not doing something in the area of pushing the envelope when it comes to environment, pushing the envelope when it comes to philanthropic investing, as well as getting their employees involved in how can they be best supporting causes they care about.
Right, right. Now, talking about the businesses that do have elements of social impact and corporate responsibility, how does this impact their business?
Well, you know, it is just now you're just now starting to see studies that actually correlate enhancing your spend on social impact with actual profits increasing. To give you an example, Unilever, you know, the massive global products company, just came out a couple of months ago stating that the three brands that they actually spent the most on social good turned out to be the most profitable. And those were Lifebuoy, Dove, and Ben & Jerry's. So to me, that is kind of proof in the pudding that if done right, it can bring a return on investment. I don't think that should be the driver of why companies are doing this. But for years, companies would say, well, we can't do that because it's going to affect the bottom line. What we're seeing now is actually proof that that's not the case, that it can enhance. But again, it needs to come authentically from the entire organization. It can't be, you know, just, you know, doing advertising and maybe doing one small campaign that is going to lead to the positive results I mentioned earlier about driving employee retention, casting the net to bring in the best possible employees so that you can compete with other companies. Those types of things come from truly built in authentic corporate responsibility programs, not just one-offs.
Exactly. You don't want, you know, a business just to say that they're doing something to either help the environment or help a social cause when it seems like, you know, it's not in line with what they're doing. It almost makes it seem like they're trying too hard to be like the companies that do have initiatives that are more in line with their business concepts and things like that.
Absolutely.
So, you know, having your background in consulting and helping businesses with this, you know, how should businesses approach an initiative for social impact or corporate responsibility? What are some steps that they can take to ensure that it doesn't happen?
Well, one, involve their entire organization. You know, years ago, or for many, many years, we used to see that CSR and corporate philanthropy was really the purview of the C-suite. Maybe it was the CEO or the CFO who had a particular cause that he or she was passionate about, and they would write a check every year or buy a table at a particular gala. Those days are fleeting. We are now seeing various people within the organization getting involved in corporate responsibility. We see leaderships of companies inquiring to get their employees involved in mass and asking for their opinions on what causes they should be involved in, or even doing surveys to find out what each can be doing to lessen the footprint that the company is having on the environment, whether it's helping them reduce their packaging, you know, the what is going in landfills, as well as the reduction of use of water.
Absolutely. And those are all such important things. And, you know, it's so great that corporations are now focusing on this. When we come back from our first break, we're going to talk more with Susan about corporate responsibility and social impact. But for right now, we'd like to invite you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter by using the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, or hashtag weforshe. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we're going to get right back to our conversation with our guest today on this show, Susan McPherson of McPherson Strategies. Before we went into the break, we talked a little bit about Susan's background, and we introduced the discussion about corporate responsibility and social impact, two topics that Susan bases a lot of her work around. So we're going to get right back to that point. Welcome back, Susan. And first, I'd like to ask you, everybody knows that there are a lot of social issues that are affecting the United States and, you know, all around the world right now. But do you believe that it is a company's place to start taking sides on an issue, a social issue? It might affect business, it might not, but do you feel that it is a business's place to get involved in something like that?
I think it's going to depend business to business. For all sorts of reasons, companies for years have stayed out of any kind of public policy situations. Although, you know, when we think about our world that we live in today, everything is so uber connected. And our social life, for instance, our family lives, our work lives are so much more blended than they ever were. Most people don't have just a 9-to-5 anymore. It kind of bleeds into the evening or the weekends. And at the same token, when we do social activities, we tend to bring them to our work. So it's one and the same. What has happened, though, is when you saw over the past couple of years, for instance, with marriage equality, companies were actually on the forefront, way ahead of the government. You had major companies like Dow Chemical and Microsoft that were pushing public policy to make changes within their states that they operate before it went to the Supreme Court and marriage equality became the law of the land. Mm-hmm. Whether that is a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not going to comment. But what I am going to say is it is a phenomena that is definitely happening.
Right. And a situation like that, when businesses were taking a stance on marriage equality, just shows how much power a company has, and why it's all the more important that, you know, they do take the initiative to work towards social good because they do have that influence on the public.
Absolutely.
Now, Susan, I want to talk to you more about the millennial generation.
Okay.
This is the generation that seems to be most in tune with different social issues. And the ones that like to voice their opinions, be it through social media or through other outlets on different social issues. How important is it for companies to focus their efforts on the millennials? And with that being said, what power does this generation have on, what these companies are doing to promote social good?
Well, two very, very important questions. Number one, they are rapidly taking over the workforce. So any company that isn't paying attention to them as employees would be foolish. Secondly, en masse, they have huge buying power, and they tend to buy in groups. So if they like a product, they are going to galvanize and gather their friends and get them to buy as well. So from a retail or a consumer goods perspective, a company would be remiss if they weren't targeting and warming up to that audience. Mm-hmm. From the social cause perspective, they can provide an army of support. So if a company is getting behind, you know, let's say girls' education, for instance, they are in a fabulous position to galvanize and attract millennials who are also passionate about that issue. And right. Therefore, help sell their product, get better employees, get lasting goodwill, and improve their reputations.
Terrific. If you're just now tuning into our show, you're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We're talking with our guest today, Susan McPherson of McPherson Strategies, about the topic of corporate responsibility and social impact. Now, we just started addressing this millennial generation, and you said how, you know, how much of an impact they have when it comes to social issues and, you know, providing their opinion. But can you explain more about the idea of slacktivism and, you know, how that can be avoided either through the millennial generation and how that can translate to what companies are doing, once again, through their efforts to promote social good?
Well, slacktivism is a phenomenon when particular people will just retweet something and that's it. Okay. Sometimes that isn't so bad. Right? I mean, if you think back 5, 6, 7 years ago, there wasn't even a way for that to exist. So if a company or a foundation or a nonprofit was pushing forth an agenda or a campaign, there was very limited ways for the public to find out about it unless a member of the media or, you know, a newspaper reporter or a broadcast journalist covered it. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say slacktivism is all that bad. I think the onus on the particular organization, again, the corporation or the foundation or the nonprofit, the onus is on them to really give their constituents many calls to action. Sometimes a company may just want its consumers to retweet something, and that's okay. But if the company or the organization doesn't spell out the different ways its population can go ahead and engage, they're losing an opportunity. So I don't think we can label and say slacktivism is all that bad. I think what has to happen is you need to give people a variety of ways they can engage.
Excellent.
And that way you are going to prevent, you know, slacktivism from really kind of taking off. That would be my kind of quick two cents on that.
Right. No, that's wonderful. And I know that you also pursue this topic through CSR chats. So
yeah.
Can you tell us more about what these chats are like and, you know, what motivated you to start these?
Well, I will tell you something funny. Years ago, actually 5 years ago, I started it as a one-off. I was doing some research on conflict minerals and I thought, gee, you know what? I'll host a Twitter chat online and poll the audience to learn more about the challenges associated with conflict minerals. After an hour, I had about 10 people say to me, when is the next one? And lo and behold, have done them now, like I said, for 5 years, and featured probably hundreds of companies at this point, ranging from Microsoft and Intel to Hilton and Ritz-Carlton, to also doing them on issues, whether it's women in philanthropy or climate change or the media covering corporate responsibility and social impact. And the way we do them is we basically invite a guest on and over an hour, you know, have a frank discussion, but also involve the crowd. And then report back on you know, with a summary. It's they're fun, they're engaging. It's a little like sitting in front of a fire hose. But I think my primary goal has been reached and will continue to be reached in that it helps people find other people in this field and forges new connections and new relationships.
Right, right. And when you're talking about the topics that you're talking about on these chats, I mean, an aspect that we like to say that we have with the radio show or just with any a summit series, a conference, you name it, part of the beauty of having a discussion like that is that you bring attention to an issue that people might not know about. And often the first step to take towards a solution is to start that conversation. So
awareness.
Right, exactly. To create awareness, and especially when you're using a platform like Twitter, you're able to share that awareness to so many people at the same time.
Absolutely. And provide a record for, you know, a week later so people can look back.
Right, right.
So I did one 2 weeks ago with Bloomberg, and numerous people, you know, were asking or coming on and looking at the tweets a week or so later to reference it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and again, that's one of the great things about social media is that, you know, you have people coming from all over at any time and accessing this information. Now, where can we find these chats and when will be the next one?
Very good question. I am about to announce a schedule for fall, which is going to focus. There's going to be 10 chats all on the Sustainable Development Goals, which have recently been kind of agreed upon globally, and those will be the goals for the next 15 years. They're the next set following the Millennium Development Goals. And I'm doing those in conjunction with the UN Foundation, and we're going to have various discussions with different corporate players that have a vested interest in seeing those development goals come to fruition. So you will be able to find them using the hashtag CSRChat. Just again, hashtag all one word CSR chat, and I will be providing that schedule very shortly. I'm just finalizing some details.
Love it. We are definitely looking forward to that. We are going to take another break, but stay with us because when we come back, we're going to learn more about McPherson's strategies. So, but first, we want to invite you all to connect with us and let us know what you think about this conversation by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, or hashtag weforshe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to get right back to our conversation with our guest today on this show, Susan McPherson of McPherson Strategies. Now, before we went to our second break, we talked more about corporate responsibility and social impact, as well as about CSR chats. So once again, we encourage all of you to look that up, CSR chats, and listen to the great things that Susan has to say about these topics. Now we're going to shift the conversation, though, to talking about McPherson strategies. So Susan, first of all, just tell us more about McPherson strategies, if you would.
Wow. Thank you. That's so delightful. McPherson Strategies is a communications consultancy dedicated to corporate responsibility communications, social impact communications, meaning helping our clients tell their stories to the right stakeholders. And that could be through the media, through earned media, as we call it, or it could be through digital and social or stakeholder engagement where there would be a particular number of individuals that they would want us to engage with on their behalf. But the one caveat is we would only work with clients on a social good or those who are looking to have a positive impact on the world.
Very interesting. Now, first, can you explain more about what communications consulting is?
Oh, certainly. There are plenty of consulting firms out there in every walk of life, from HR to technology to, when you think of the traditional PwCs and E&Ys, Ernst & Youngs, which, you know, help with business strategy. Increasingly, and over the last 20 years, communicating to stakeholders in effective and strategic ways has become extraordinarily important, especially with the advent of so many different communications channels, as well as more and more noise. At the same time, with less and less news media covering. So what happens is you have to be much more strategic in your messaging, as well as knowing the audiences you want to reach so you can meet them where they are. So what we do is we help organizations, corporations, nonprofits, and social enterprises really figure out a strategy to most effectively reach their target audience and through the method or means that make the most sense. So sometimes it may not be through social. Sometimes it may be through paid media, but part of the whole notion is to help them figure that out and then advise them and help them with the messaging so that audiences respond in a way that they want them to.
Terrific. Now, can you tell us more about what inspired you to start McPherson Strategies and, your journey to establishing your own you know, your own platform of consulting that is clearly very unique in its
Thank you. You know, honestly, and one of the things I advise younger women who are considering starting their own consulting practices, I was in my late 40s when I chose to do this. And I honestly think if I had started earlier, I might not have been successful. Even though I might have had more energy, I wouldn't have the network that I had built and really harvested and nurtured over the years to make it successful. In the first 2 years of the business, knock on wood, I did not have to do any outbound marketing. Business came in, and I feel incredibly blessed. But I also think that is, you know, from 35 years of really nurturing a network of incredible people. I do think that that is what led to the success. I think also, again, being a woman in her late 40s, got to the point where I was confident enough to go ahead and put the shingle out. Even though there were some days where I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do today? And I would look at my iPhone and that would tell me, you know, my schedule for the day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, truth be told, it was the confidence at that point in my life that enabled me to go forward and carry on and hire people and continue to do what I'm doing today. But it also, I love what I do, and it's wonderful knowing that we're having a positive impact.
Perfect. I'd like to remind you that you are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We're once again talking with our guest today on the show, Susan McPherson, about McPherson Strategies. Now, Susan, when you're working with these companies and these organizations, where do you wish to see, once again, these businesses and organizations by the time that you're finished with them?
Well, we want to see them meet the goals that we established in the beginning. Oftentimes, at the kickoff, it's very important to set expectations. And oftentimes, you know, we will say, what is perfection? In the end of this engagement, what do you want to see happen? And then we scale back to reality, because not everyone can be on the front of, you know, the New York Times business section or in Time magazine, correct? Mm-hmm. So we have to really get a sense of what they want to do, what is the action they want their particular target audience to take. And again, target audience could be their employees, it could be their customers, it could be their donors. So it's who's the audience, what is the action they want the audience to take, and how will they know in the end they were successful? Once we have that down, then we chart the roadmap to get there. And at the end of the engagement, if we haven't gotten there, well, then, you know, shame on us. But more importantly, we have to make sure that throughout the engagement, we are constantly checking to make sure we are on target. And if we're not, we have to pivot and figure out a better route to get there.
Right, right. Now, you're also very known for helping businesses seek partnerships with each other. And I'm sure when you're trying to create a campaign for social impact, it is important that you do have partnerships between businesses to get the help that, you know, you can't provide yourself as just one business, or, you know, to try to seek other partnerships. So how do you think is the best way to create a successful professional partnership between businesses, organizations, or companies?
Michelle, it's a great question. And I'll be honest with you, and I know I've said that, like, of course, I'm not going to lie to you. we live in a world today where there are huge, huge, multi-layered challenges and problems. We, you know, cut to the chase. We know that's the case. And we need everybody at the table, whether it's a combination of for-profit and nonprofit, whether it's a combination of government and advocacy. We need the best minds working together to solve problems. So to me, the most important thing when it comes to building partnerships is bringing parties to the table and knowing in advance what can each offer the other, and developing it in such a way so it isn't unbalanced. Meaning, you know, when you look at traditional corporate and nonprofit partnerships, oftentimes the nonprofit feels inadequate or perhaps not as important as the corporate because they're not bringing cash. But there are a wide variety of benefits that the nonprofit can bring to the table. So in essence, what I think I'm saying is to ensure that a partnership is successfully created, it's setting up expectations. Again, you're hearing me repeat that word, but it's setting up expectations in the beginning and ensuring that each has a role that is of equal value. Mm-hmm. Because truly a partnership needs to be 50-50 or it won't succeed.
Right, exactly. And, you know, before we go to our next break, I'd love to know, who are some of your clients that you work with through McPherson Strategies?
Of course. You would like to know that now, or are we going to take that on the break?
We can learn a little bit more. What are the organizations and companies that you work with?
Sure. Intel and Girl Rising. You may be familiar with Girl Rising, of course, given that this is women and girls focused.
Very much so.
Intel helped fund the film, which was a fabulous, fabulous film, and then in addition helped galvanize the campaign, the global campaign, to really put on everybody's minds the importance of educating girls around the world. Hummingbird Foundation, which is a wonderful family foundation in Manhattan that started a community called Hearts on Fire. And the Hearts on Fire community is a community of rock star social entrepreneurs. Think of, you know, Jacqueline Novogratz and Lila Janna and Jimmy Briggs and Tammy Tibbetts and Becky Straw. These individuals all have made helping the world their career choice. So what we have done with that community is get notoriety for the community, but also help connect all these entrepreneurs so that they can be learning from each other. Mm-hmm. Starting up a major philanthropy project with a retailer that unfortunately I can't mention, but it's a historic U.S. brand, and going to be helping them redefine and redevelop their philanthropic platform. And make sure they're getting the attention they deserve with regards to the incredible corporate philanthropy they have been doing and plan to be doing going forward. The Green Electronics Council, which is the foremost organization that help companies around the world who create any of the pieces that go into your refrigerator or your phone or your TV to ensure that all of those, let's call them ingredients, are as sustainable as potentially mm-hmm. possible. So I could go on and on, but there's a lot, and they're all beautifully interesting.
Right, and you know, it's so incredible that you're working with all these different companies and organizations to help them promote social impact and corporate responsibility. When we get back from this next break, we're going to talk more about how you've been able to work within investing as well as some few closing questions, learning more about what is in for your future. First, I'd like to invite all of you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting. And by going on Twitter, you can use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, and hashtag weforshe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today on our show, Susan McPherson of McPherson Strategies. And we talked about McPherson Strategies before we went to break. And now, you know, Susan has done a lot of things, and one of those is being an angel investor. So, Susan, could you describe your experiences as an investor?
Absolutely. For years, would write checks to nonprofits because I'm not putting kids through college, and I figured I can't take it to the grave, so I might as well be supporting those organizations that I believe in. And about 5 years ago, it became clear to me that another way to provide support and help the social good that we all live in is to help women entrepreneurs who are wanting to realize their dreams and, oh, by the way, create jobs. So, as an extension of my philanthropy, I decided to start supporting women entrepreneurs through angel investing. And, you know, if if I was an astute, careful investor, I might be a little bit more conservative as to when I invest because I may not be getting the returns I should, but in the end, I'm gaining a real sense of satisfaction that I'm enabling or helping to support women that I believe in and women that I want to see succeed.
Right, right. Now, as far as how you invest, though, do you believe that you've changed your investment philosophy over the years?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I have so much going on. I have to rely on, you know, an investment advisor, and I turn most of it over. But I always kind of once a year go to them and say I want a slush fund to be able to do some personal investing. So basically that's how that, and I feel sometimes like I'm going to like grandfather asking, can I, you know, have X, Y, and Z. But I don't want this to come across as, you know, I'm this wealthy individual. I'll be completely frank and candid. The only reason I have money from which to invest at this level at this point in my life is sadly because I lost my mom in a tragedy that resulted in a class action lawsuit, and that was many, many years ago. And there's nothing I could do better in my mother's name and in her honor than to support women who are trying to build and further their businesses.
Well, that's great. I mean, we talk about how you know, that women have trouble accessing capital and, you know, there aren't enough female investors. So, I mean, what an amazing way to change those lives. And
absolutely.
People can use money for many things, but to invest in a woman is something that has, you know, a payback more than just an immediate, gratification. It's something that you can benefit from for a very long time. What is it like to invest in a woman-owned business? How has that been for you? How many do you believe, what percentage do you believe that you have invested in that are owned by women?
Actually, out of the 8 that I've invested in, 7 are owned by women.
So, wow.
Yeah. And the one that wasn't, it was the women who were in senior positions that convinced me to do it. So it's definitely the number one criteria I look for when choosing, and for the very reason that you just stated, and that is that the vast majority of women have, and I should say, you know, I should launch, I should, women and minorities have challenges raising funds, but definitely right. Women and certainly female minorities, face this as a major challenge. So to me, when I look at it, it's very similar with the philanthropic endeavors that I have supported, which are very much women and girls focused causes. So it keeps in line with my hopes and dreams for others.
Terrific. With that being said, what do you find most fulfilling about your work, whether it be through the McPherson strategies or, through investing in others? What do you find is most fulfilling about what you do?
I believe they're all connected, and it would be hard for me to say one is more than the other because in some ways they're all related. I think there's nothing more fulfilling than helping people, and people can be women entrepreneurs, people can be NGOs, people can be corporations, as the Supreme Court deemed way back or a few years ago, helping them realize their dreams. There's nothing to me more satisfying than truly helping people reach whatever their desired outcome is. Again, you know, as long as there is some semblance of social good,
right.
That I guess just goes to my character and what makes me the happiest. And all of the work that I do, whether it's my nonprofit endeavors, you know, I serve on the board of USA for UNHCR, which is helping advocate and support refugees around the world, whether it's BPeace, Business Council for Peace, which is helping women entrepreneurs around the world, or helping see the angel investments companies succeed, and that includes organizations such as Loverly and The List and Zadie, as well as The Muse. A new one that is launching very shortly called Hello Bean, which is all about helping millennial women have the tools that they need to make investment decisions. So all of those types of things, you know, it's difficult to say which is the most satisfying because I think it's like I have to take them as an entire package.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely understand that each one has, you know, a special place in your heart and has a special place within what you're passionate about. So I think that's valid and admirable that all of them have such a large impact in what you do. And Susan, what are you working on now, though? What do you have that's coming up in your future that you're excited about?
Well, you're talking to me the day after I got home from a week's vacation in Dubrovnik and Rome. For a long time, that's what I was most excited about. But now I'm heading into the third year of McPherson Strategies, and 4 new clients are coming on board. So I'm very, very, very excited to get going with them. I'm speaking in September at the Inbound Conference in Boston. So, as well as the Net Impact Conference and the Business for Social Responsibility Conference. So it's going to be a very, very busy fall. So I would say I'm excited about all of the above, but it doesn't take away from interviews like this, which are also truly exciting for me and fun. So it's not all about the big limelight and the stage. Sometimes these individual conversations are extraordinarily inspiring because it helps just remind me, wow, we're doing a lot.
Of course, yes. Everything that you do is just so amazing and very successful. So it is great to be able to spotlight that. Something that we always like to ask our guests on the show is also if you have advice for young women and girls that you'd like to share.
Absolutely. Get on social media, first of all, and if you're not, do so like tonight. Learn how to code so that you can build websites, so that you can be advising your elders. And join and get involved in various causes that you believe in. If anything, to meet other like-minded individuals and make new friends. And whether you do it through your workplace or elsewhere, it will help you professionally, even though it may seem like it might take time away from your professional work. And ask and always be inquisitive. I think that knowledge is power in this world, and the more you can be asking of others and learning on your own, will come back in huge dividends as you grow and advance your career. Lastly, if you work at a large organization or a medium-sized organization, find some people that are not in your particular department to befriend and look to for advice and ways to learn about other parts of the organization.
Wonderful. That's some great advice. And it has been such an honor to have you on our show. And I think that, you know, this conversation was very important to have. So thank you again for your contribution. And we wish you the best of success in the next year and beyond.
Michelle, thank you very, very much. I've really enjoyed this interview.
Thank you. Now, we also encourage all of you to let us know what you thought about the discussion that we had today. Remember to go on to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter. You can use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, and hashtag weforshe to leave your comment on there. We'd also like to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Women Investing and Women and Girls. The show is produced by the State of Women Radio Network, the first radio network for women and girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls with Michelle Jaffe. Download our shows on iTunes or listen on demand right here on thestateofwomen.com, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on delivering the latest trends in investing, entrepreneurship, and global women's issues by and for women and girls.